Last Sunday night, I was praying and meditating, just thinking about all that God had done and is doing in our church and our congregation the last couple of weeks, and really for the last year and a half. And I just began to brag on God, not brag on us, but brag on all that God's done back to Him. And I thought, you know, the last couple of Sundays, just crowds have been incredible. You guys have been here, and even on a holiday weekend, we're full. And I joked with somebody last week. They said we came in at our normal time, 10 after 10, and we couldn't sit. We had to walk down to the front. And I said, in Baptist life, we call that the walk of shame, because you come in late. But what a blessing that we've been so full, and we're going to continue to grow and continue to be blessed. Last week in our children's area, we had almost 30 first through fifth graders, almost 20 preschool kids, almost 50 children, fifth grade and under. And I know that may not seem like a big deal, but I can remember not too long ago when we were celebrating having 5 kids that weren't SIDS down in the nursery. And so, I mean, I just thought, Lord, what a blessing. You know, a couple of weeks ago, if you were here with us, we had to join the church. People were lined up across the front from door to door, joining this church, saying this is where we believe God's called us to be. And, you know, God continues to bless us financially. And then the last couple of weeks, the choir, last week, every chair was full. And they, just to see them with joy and sharing and leading us in worship, just to hear you worship, there has been an anticipation spirit. You've come with an excitement about what God is doing and how He's doing it. And I've talked to so many of you in the last couple of weeks who say God is challenging you and teaching you and calling you to a deeper walk, calling you to get more involved. And as I was saying all this, just in my spirit, I thought, Lord, just keep pouring it out. God, just keep doing what you're doing. And in the same breath that I expressed that to the Holy Spirit, the Holy Spirit whispered in my heart, be ready for battle. Because I was a reminder that when times are going great, when God is blessing us, when things are going beyond what we could ever imagine, those are the very times when we least expect it, when the enemy comes in and attacks, when the enemy wants to be on the move. Now, I've come to realize in church, when you talk about the enemy, when you talk about Satan, that most people in church fall into one of two extreme categories. And earlier when I mentioned Satan, probably it made you think about one of those two categories that you fall in. You've got one group of people who they're obsessed with satanic issues and spiritual warfare. I mean, they see Satan in everything that they do. You may know some of these people that they're always talking about spiritual warfare, and they're always talking about girding up in the spiritual armor, and everything that happens to them that's bad is from the devil. They are driving in the rain and they get a flat tire. That must be the devil. They walking out of their bed and going to the bathroom in the middle of the night and they stub their toe. That must be the devil, right? No, it might mean that you're clumsy. Don't blame everything on the devil. And it's not healthy to have that kind of obsession about Satan, because it steals your joy for your salvation and you lose out on so much more of what Christianity is. But just as dangerous is the other extreme. There are a lot of people in the church who just ignore Satan. Matter of fact, I believe there are a lot of people in the church who just don't believe he exists, who act like he doesn't exist. We think of him as this cartoon. He's got a pointy tail and little horns, and he runs around, you know, trying to do mischief. And both of those extremes are very, very dangerous. The Bible's very clear that we need to have a healthy respect and regard for the enemy. And that's what Peter calls him, our enemy. Now, the devil's not omnipotent. He's not omniscient. He can't read your mind. He can't control you. He can't make you do things. But as Paul warned in that passage I read earlier in Ephesians 6, he does have power. And his goal is to destroy your walk with the Lord. His goal is to destroy what the church was called to do here on this earth. And he has all the power of the world and the world's systems at his hands. And you and I need to wake up to the reality that the enemy is always dangerous. Peter says in 2 Peter 5, 8 and 9, be self-controlled and alert, for your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him. Stand firm in the faith, because you know your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kind of suffering. Jesus said in John 10:10, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. You want to know what Satan's goal is? To steal, kill, and destroy everything that God holds dear. And that means everything that you hold dear. He wants to destroy your marriage. He wants to destroy your happiness. He wants to destroy your peace. He wants to steal the things that God has planted in your heart. Jesus goes on in John 8, for says he was, talking about the devil, a murderer from the beginning, never holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native tongue, for he is a liar and the father of lies. See, the devil is a liar, and he will lie to you and tell you you are not good enough and not smart enough and not loved and all alone. And one of the things I've noticed about the enemy, the devil, in my life, Satan, is that when times are going bad, when things are tough, that he doesn't even try to hide his attacks. He just comes out and you are attacked. Have you ever felt like when times are bad and it just piled on, when one bad thing happened after another bad thing happened after another bad thing, he just attacks. But when times are going good, when things are seemingly going great, he is much more subtle in his attack. He comes in when you least expect it and how you least expect it and when you're not ready. So you and I need to recognize that when we commit our life to Jesus Christ, when we declare before God and man that we are going to live according to the precepts and the truths in this book, when we are not just going to hear it, but we are going to be faithfully obedient to this book, when we commit our marriage and our relationships and our lives to this book, you are opening yourself to an attack. And I promise you, you have been attacked and you will be attacked. See, the enemy always wants to turn every weapon at his disposal on you. He wants to knock you down, to slow you down, to beat you down, to bring doubt into your life, to make you compromise, to make you quit. And he uses every tool he can. You and I, Peter says, need to be alert. Not ignoring him, not being obsessed with him, be alert. And Paul warned us in that passage I read earlier that our enemy is not flesh and blood. Our enemy is not other people. It's against the principalities of the air. But what I want to share with you this morning is that while they are not our enemy, the enemy will use people in and around our lives to attack us. And they will always come when you least expect it. And in our lessons, if we've been looking at the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah has already faced opposition. When he cast his vision, when he told them, God's told me we've got to rebuild the wall, there was opposition against him. But as they began to progress and as they began to build the wall, the opposition got worse and worse and worse. And in Nehemiah chapter 6, there is a pattern of opposition that the enemy uses to attack Nehemiah and his followers that I want you to see this morning. Because it is the same pattern that the enemy will use to attack you. When things are going good in your life, when you're being blessed and when you're being encouraged, you've got to be alert because the enemy is seeking a way to steal your joy, to lie to you, to rob your happiness. And what you need to understand is that God has given you some tools to be able to defeat him. But the most important thing I think we can do is to be aware of how he attacks. So you have Bible, look at Nehemiah 6, and we're just going to look through four principles that jump out of this passage that are ways that the enemy will use to attack us. And it is always through other people, people we know, people we love, people we work with. And when you begin to see those patterns, you can do something about it. Now let me read Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 1. It says, when word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, these are the same three that attacked him in Nehemiah chapter 3, and the rest of our enemies, that I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left in it, though up through that time I had not set the doors in the gate, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message, come, let us meet together in one of the villages. Now, why do they all of a sudden begin to amplify their attacks? See, before, they were just throwing out little, complaints and insults. They were just being snide in how they attack. But here in chapter 6, they upgrade it. Why? Because they are almost complete with what God had called them to do. And the place that you are most susceptible to being attacked is when you begin to see God move in and through your life. When your marriage begins to seem like everything is going good, when your things at work and God is blessing you and everything that you touch seems to be blessed, when the church is doing wonderful and God is reaching people and all the good things that we equate with a healthy, successful church are a reality, those are the times when the enemy will pour it on. Because the last thing he wants to do is, listen, I used to hear people say, well, you know, Satan doesn't care about me, and he really doesn't. You know what Satan cares about? He cares about destroying God's name and God's reputation. And he will use you to do it. Why? Because you are God's disciple. As a Christian, you wear his name. And so if he can discredit you, if he can pull you down, then he can discredit what God is doing in you and what God is doing through you. And he always attacks when things seem to be going good. It is when you least expect it. Some of the greatest attacks I've seen in my life and in other believers' lives always happen right before a great victory. Sometimes it's right before a breakthrough. You're about to see what you've been praying for become a reality, and the attacks get so big that you never experience it. You never walk into it because you quit. Sometimes it happens right after a great victory. I'll tell you, in my life, the times that I am most susceptible to be attacked is on Sunday afternoon and Sunday night and Monday morning, especially when God moves in this service or when God is moving in the church. Because people can say, oh, it was an incredible service and God's Spirit moved, and I'll go home, and the enemy will say, you forgot to say this and you didn't say that. And did you see that person on the eighth row that was giving you an ugly look? He didn't care what you had to say. I mean, it's stupid stuff, but it internalizes. You should have said this. You could have said it better. You could. Nobody was listening. Nobody cares what you say. And you say, well, that doesn't matter. But over time, it piles on. And some of you have been there. Usually after a great victory, when things are going good, you're emotionally drained. You're open to being attacked. The Bible's full of these kind of attacks. Isaiah, David, Elijah on Mount Carmel. Always Peter, attacked and attacked and attacked. And you see, what they begin to realize, the reason they pushed this attack on Nehemiah is because they realized they couldn't stop what he was doing, but they could stop him. And you see, that's the way the devil works in the church. Because if the devil can't stop a move of God, he will go in and attack the individuals that are working that move of God. How many times have you seen in a church that God was using to reach their community, to reach the nation, the pastor or associate pastors or ministers or deacons get caught in immorality? Get caught doing something that they shouldn't do. Why? Because if the devil can't stop what God is doing, he's going to discredit you and I to see that it gets stopped. And so they realized that they couldn't stop the wall. It was almost finished. But they could discredit Nehemiah enough that nobody would give God credit for what he was doing. And so they pour it on. And he uses four methods I mentioned here. And go back and listen to verse 2. For Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message. Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me. So I sent a messenger to them with this reply. I'm carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave to go down to you? Four times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave them the same reply. You see, this is the first attack that the enemy will use to get you. He tries to isolate you. You see, they were saying, Nehemiah, you need to leave Jerusalem, leave your support, leave your friends, leave all of those resources that were helping you stand strong, and we want to get you down in this little over village, and then we can begin to attack you. And the one tool that the enemy uses to attack us is to isolate us, to get us away from our support, to get us away from our community. And he begins to whisper in our ear, nobody else is on your side. You're the only one going through this. Have you ever felt like that? In the middle of a trial, in the middle of a difficulty, in the middle of a disaster in your own life, and you hear the enemy whisper in your ear, no one else understands. You're the only one that is enduring this. No one else cares. No one else is thinking about you. Because when he isolates, he pulls you away from strength, because your source of strength is community. That's why I tell you all the time, the greatest place, if you're struggling and if you're being attacked, the greatest place that you can be is in church. Because when you're in church, you realize that you're not the only one going through it. You're not the only one struggling. You're not the only one dealing with that kind of pain. There are people in our relationships that God brings to lift us up. So many times I see people that are struggling with emotional issues and struggling with health issues and physical issues, and they isolate themselves instead of putting themselves in community. That's the opposite thing that the Bible tells us to do. They were trying to get him away from his source of strength so they could isolate him. But Nehemiah used discernment to smell it out. He didn't give in. He wouldn't be isolated. He realized that the way he stood is standing with everyone else. See, church, I want you to understand, you can never let your guard down. He was almost at the finish line. He was almost done. And these attacks came. Just when you think everything is okay, that's when the attack comes. If you notice, this first attack is kind of low-key. It's private. But every attack after that escalate to take what was private and make it more public. The first step that the enemy will use to attack you is to isolate you, to make you feel all alone, to make you feel that you're by yourself. Don't fall for it. Listen to what Nehemiah says in verse 3. How does he answer him? I have a job to do and will not be distracted. See, you can't negotiate or compromise with evil. You can't give in just a little. You have got to stand on what you believe is the truth. You can't allow yourself to be distracted. Any distraction will slow you down from what God is calling you to. Now they take their attacks public. The first one was isolation. Listen to the second one, verse 5. Then the fifth time, they sent him a letter, Sanballat sent his aide to me with the same message. And in his hand was an unsealed letter, unsealed, that meant everybody was reading it, in which was written, "It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it's true, that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you are about to become the king and have even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem. For there is a king in Judah. Now this report will get back to the king, so come, let us confer together." And I sent him a reply, "Nothing like what you are saying is happening. You are making it up in your head. They were all trying to frighten us, thinking their heads will get too weak for their work and they will not be completed. But I prayed, Lord, strengthen my hand." Four times they tried to lure him in private. The fifth time they made it public. What is that? That's insinuation. You see, what they wanted to do is to question his motives. They wanted to question who he was. And the way that they did it was to try to spread gossip. Gossip and insinuation is one of the most deadly things in the church. It destroys her. Do you realize that the writer of Proverbs spends more time talking about the deadly dangers of gossip than anything else? I've seen more churches, more Christians that are trying to live what God has called them to live, destroyed, utterly stopped by gossip and innuendo. See, they're trying to come in and take a little bit of truth and attack personally. And I'd love to tell you that when you're attacked personally through gossip or innuendo, that it doesn't hurt, but it does. It hurts. It's personal. Hurts your family, hurts your reputation, hurts those around you. Because the enemy knows that if he can spread rumors, if he can insinuate evil, then you will quit what you're doing or get distracted from what you're doing. Because you don't want to hurt. You don't want these rumors. You know how gossip works. I laugh when I read this because it is so close to every attack of gossip that I've ever faced. Did you hear the very first thing that they say? This is how gossip works. What do they say? People are saying. That's what it says there. We hear people in the nation saying. Have you ever heard anybody come to you that? Listen, it's not me, but you know, there are some people out there that are saying. See, what they want to do is they want to intimidate you. There's never a source declared. No one says, this person said this. I'm hearing. Some people are saying. You see, they want you to think that there's a big group out there. It's all talking about you. That's all word. Because with numbers is intimidation. And so they are trying to insinuate this. And always gossip contains exaggeration and inaccuracy. They will take a little bit of truth and they'll blow it up. Because there's just a little kernel of what you said or what you did. Yes, he's building a wall. But he's not building a wall to be king. He's not building a wall to rule. So they take that little truth and then they just spread it. And they spread. You ever play that game or when you were a kid where you had to whisper something into the next person's ear and they whispered and they whispered and they whispered and you went all the way around the room to see what came out at the end? It's always funny how everybody adds a little to the story. They add some flavor. And that's the way gossip spreads. We hear it. We want to add our take on it and the next take. And we don't realize how we are destroying somebody's walk with the Lord and how we are destroying who they are. Gossip always lacks the whole story, lacks the context, lacks the motives, doesn't give the person you're talking about the benefit of the doubt. And usually it's shared in the wrong setting. If you hear something, if you have a problem, if you hear a rumor, go to that person. Go talk to them. Don't go to your phone or to your Sunday school class or to the post office or to the women's gathering that you have. Go to that person. And you want to know how to stop gossip? You want to know how to shut down innuendo? When somebody says they heard this, turn around and look at them and say, "Can I quote you?" "Oh, no, I didn't hear it." But gossip is used. Why? It's used to shut you down, to get you discouraged, to get you to quit, to get you to give up. And did you see how Nehemiah responded? He stood up for the truth. Nehemiah didn't defend himself. He didn't say, "Okay, time out. I got to go and worry. Now, who is all these people and what are they saying?" And he didn't have a pity party. "Poor me. I can't believe people are talking about me." He just said, "Listen, that's not the truth." So many times when people try to insinuate stuff about us, we spend most of our time trying to defend ourselves. You don't need to defend yourself. What did Nehemiah do? He said, "This is the truth, and now I'm going to go to God. God, you take care of it. God, strengthen my hand." Because God can take care of spreading His truth and shutting those people down much quicker than you can. We began to spend all of our time worrying and focusing on what was said and how it was said and who knows it. And what does that do? It gets us off track of what God was calling us to do. So many of us get sucked into insinuation. And as Christians, we unintentionally get sucked into it too because we love gossip, right? There is this ancient Gnosticism within us. That means to know. We love to know stuff that nobody else knows. And so many times gossip is couched in the idea that I'm telling you something that no one else knows. The moment you hear something like that, you need to shut it down. And before you ever spread it, you need to ask, is this right? Is it true? And is it necessary for me to share? Do I know this to be true? Did I see it happen? Did I watch it? Was I a firsthand participant? Is it right for me to share this? Is it necessary that I share this? Can you imagine how much table talk would be shut down if we held those three rules? See, gossip is a sin, but it's also a destroyer of the works of God. It comes in like a little yeast in the church, and it becomes a poison, a cancer that spreads. And it undermines the work of God and the leadership of God and the things that God is doing. Nehemiah stood up for the truth and he turned the people over to God. Now, please hear me. There is a grave difference between self-examination and constructive criticism and accusations and gossip. We need to always be open to self-examination. Always be open to people that come and say, "I've got a problem with this that you did," and to be able to examine ourselves. But we don't need to give a place to accusations and gossip in our life. Don't take it. I remember when I've been here a couple of years and we had two services, and some of you may remember this, and my spiritual gift is prophecy, and that doesn't mean that I foretell the truth. It means I like to speak the truth, and everything's black and white, and I don't hold back when I try to speak the truth. And between the services, we had an early service and a second service. I went into my office to get ready to come back into the second service, and somebody had left me a note on my desk that was unsigned, complaining about some things in the church. So I did what any biblical prophet would do. I brought it in and read it in the 11 o'clock worship service. And then I tore it up. Because if you don't have the guts to sign your name, then I don't give you any credibility to speak into my life. You see, if we would learn to speak truth into gossip, to speak truth into lies, it would shut down half of the problems that confront the church. And it destroys you and I in our personal lives. We spend way too much energy worrying about insinuation. You see, they wanted to isolate. The enemy wants to isolate you. He wants to insinuate things against your character. And then look, they take it to an even greater degree in verse 10. It says, one day I went to the house of Shammai, the son of Deliah, the son of Methabel, who was shut up in his home. And he said, let us meet in the house of God inside the temple, and let us close the temple doors, because men are coming to kill you. And by night they are coming to kill you. But I said, should a man like me run away? Or should one like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go. And I realized that God had not sent him, but he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me so I would commit a sin by doing this, and they would have reason to discredit me. See, if the enemy can't come at you by isolating and by bringing insinuation, then the next thing he does is try to intimidate you. And that always produces fear. Because if the enemy can get you to fear those consequences that he introduces into your life, then he gets you to quit. He can tell you, listen, you can't do that. It's going to cost you your job. You can't stand up for those principles. It'll cost you your job. It'll cost you your relationships. It'll cost you your livelihood. And the moment we give in to fear and insinuation is the moment we back away from what God's calling us to do. And please hear me. Did you notice who he sent? Sent one of his good friends. What I found in my life is many times the enemy will use some of those people that are closest to us to bring the most dangerous attacks. And that doesn't mean you don't need to have friends. It means you need to have discernment. And you need to know who's really your friend and who's not your friend. Some of us, you've probably been hurt and lied about and gossiped about by some people that you considered your closest friends. But don't feel bad. Jesus had 12 friends and one of them turned his back on him. It happened to him. It can happen to you and me. And the thing that was so cool about this story is, how did they try to intimidate him? They tried to intimidate him under the guise of spirituality. We need to go to the temple. We need to go be spiritual. And I've seen so many Christians get intimidated through spiritual language in the church than anything else. Some of the biggest bullies that I've met in the church always couch their things in spiritual language, right? You ever met these kind of people? If you disagree with me, then you're disagreeing with God and America and apple pie, right? They color it up so that if you're on the wrong side of them, then you can't be following God. Nehemiah said, I'm going to pray about this. And God revealed to him, this isn't true. They're trying to discredit you. Fear is one of the greatest enemies of the Christian walk. Fear is always wiped out by faith. And when we have little faith, fear takes over. Some of you, the reason you're not doing what God's called you to do in your life, in your walk, you're not following your God-given dream because you've allowed the enemy to lie to you and to intimidate you to a place of fear. Because if the enemy can get you to be fearful, he can get you to quit. Nehemiah chose God over his own safety. Nehemiah said, I don't care if this costs me my reputation. I don't care if it costs me my life. If they come kill me, I'm going to do what God's called me to do. Please hear, the safest place a Christian can be is in the middle of God's will. Doesn't matter if you're all alone in a Muslim nation in a life-threatening situation. If you're doing what God told you to do, where God told you to do it, when God told you to do it, you are at the safest place you can ever be. Don't allow fear to keep you from speaking up. Don't allow fear to keep you from following your dream. Don't allow fear and worry to keep you from being obedient to what God has called you in your life. Insinuation, isolation, intimidation. And then there's one more thing. Look at verse 17. Verse 15 and 16, they build the wall. Everything's done. He says, we're complete and it should be a celebration. But they still didn't give up because they had one more tool to try to throw at him. Look what happens in verse 17. And also in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah, and the replies from Tobiah were coming to them. For many in Judah were under oath to him, since he was the son-in-law of Shinnai, the son of Ara. And his son, Jehonan, had married the daughter of so-and-so and so-and-so. Now, verse 19. Moreover, they kept reporting to me his good deeds and then telling him what I said. And Tobiah sent more letters to intimidate me. You see, even after you've completed what God's told you to do, the devil doesn't quit. Because if he sees what you've built, his last tool is to undermine you. What were they trying to do? They couldn't isolate him. They couldn't intimidate him. They couldn't let insinuation stick. So then they decided once it was done, they were going to undermine his authority. They were telling and sending letters, and Tobiah was sending letters saying, you shouldn't trust him. You shouldn't trust him. I can't tell you how many incredible works of God. I mean, just think about this, and I don't want to get political. But just think about all that you've heard about the Catholic Church in the last couple of months and the sexual sins. I wonder how many people that are in the Catholic Church that are not believers have walked away from the church, gone to church all their life because of those things. You see, some of those things happened years and years ago, and that doesn't excuse them or make them bad. But what it's done is the enemy has used those things to undermine all the works that the Catholic Church has done. You hear about some great churches, and a pastor will get accused of something, and all the things that they have done for 20 years are undermined because of one mistake. It's why it's so important that the Bible says we've got to learn to stand. Don't give in. Don't be undermined by your own lack of character or lack of integrity. Nehemiah said, I'm going to let my walk be my witness. People can spread rumors, but when they look at me, they won't see any truth in those rumors. When they lie about me, people will look at my life and say, that can't be true. I've seen how he lives. I've seen how he talks. When they isolate me, I'm going to get more with community. And if my community's not there to lift me up, I'm going to get along with the Lord. Because while I may be facing some enemies, I'm never alone. I love Nehemiah's response to all of this, but there's one response I hadn't brought up, and I'm going to close with it. See, they isolated him, and they insinuated, and they intimidated him, and they undermined him. Every trick. Same way the enemy will come at you. But he kept standing for truth, standing on his principles. He kept praying. But lastly, and most important, and it goes all the way through chapter 6, he kept working. He never stopped. Kept moving forward. That's the greatest response to the enemy. When he throws everything he can at you, and he's attacking you and undermining you and trying to intimidate you and fear is coming in, just keep moving forward. Keep trusting God. Keep doing what God's called you to do. Stand in the faith of what he has put in your life, that God-given dream, that God-given goal, and go after it. Because when we stop is the place that we come under even greater attack because we give up. Keep moving forward. Always faithful to what God's called you to. What an example. You see, I want you to understand, church, you and I are going to face opposition. You're going to face accusations. I wish I could tell you that's not the case. I wish I could tell you it wasn't going to be painful or difficult to go through. But the moment you took on Jesus' name, you put a target. And let me just say this on the opposite side. If you're not facing attacks on a daily basis, you may be walking the wrong way. Because the Bible's pretty clear that when you stand for Christ, slings and arrows will come your way. But any cause that's worth doing is a cause that someone will always feel the need to criticize. You understand that all great causes have great critics, and the enemy loves a critic. The question for you and I this morning, how will you respond? How will you respond? Will you quit? Will you give up? Will you back up? Will you move forward? Or will you be stronger and more determined than ever? And please understand me. Some of you this morning, your past is riddled with giving up and quitting. But how you responded in the past is no longer relevant to your future. This morning's a new day. It's a new opportunity. And as you go through this week and the enemy says you always quit, you always give up, you never finish, you tell him he's a liar and you keep moving forward. God would not, listen to me, I'm done. God would not have chosen you for this task or to serve in that area or revealed to you the truth that you are supposed to stand on if he did not know that you could fulfill it. He would not have asked you to do it if he didn't know that you could do it. The attacks are going to come. Will you be ready? How will you respond? Will you be ready and alert, or will you be caught off guard? Let's pray.